It is Tuesday, October 1st, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. Support for KUAF is provided by the 8th Annual Cherokee Art Market, featuring 130 Native American artists, along with interactive cultural demonstrations held October 12th and 13th inside Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, Tulsa. More information is available at CherokeeArtMarket.com.
Ahead on Ozarks, an unusually significant Tuesday as the healthcare exchange goes live in Arkansas today and the rhetoric in Washington, D.C. escalates as the federal government comes to a halt. John Brumman will talk to Roby Brock about a particularly contentious time in politics.
Plus, the muralist Mazur leaves a multicolored mark on Springdale.
First, Governor Mike Beebe says a federal shutdown will result in between 600 and 6,000 Arkansas jobs being furloughed in the short term and up to 18,000 if it's prolonged. Governor Beebe and the heads of several state agencies gathered yesterday afternoon to discuss how Arkansas plans to move forward in the event federal funds are halted by a shutdown. Governor Beebe says the state can't pick up the slack.
The state is not in a position to, nor will we, bail out the federal government. I mean, we just don't have the resources to be able to do it, nor is it our intention to do so.
The governor says he'll work to find unorthodox solutions to keep essential services running. He warns programs for low-income Arkansans are likely to face the most severe cuts because a greater percentage of their funding comes from federal sources. This includes up to 85,000 meals for children this week alone.
The government shutdown affects many federally funded programs, such as the furlough of federal workers to the closure of national parks like the Buffalo National River. But Arkansas Department of Health officials yesterday reached an agreement with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to keep one program going after the government shutdown. The two agencies agreed to keep the Women's, Infants, and Children's Program, or WIC, funded on a week-by-week basis. Ed Barham, spokesperson for the State Health Department, says the program's continued funding is crucial for those the nutrition program serves.
We'll be working with the USDA trying to find ways to fund the program past this next week, and those negotiations are going to be ongoing. We'll continue to try to find a way to provide proper nutrition for women, infants, and children through our WIC program.
273 State Health Department employees' jobs are funded through the WIC program. The agreement between the USDA and State Health Department will cover state administrative costs for this week, which will prevent furloughing of WIC staff and allow the state to continue issuing WIC certifications and recertifications without interruption. But Barham says the issue is far from solved.
We'll be working with the USDA trying to find ways to fund the program past this next week, and those negotiations are going to be ongoing. We'll continue to try to find a way to provide proper nutrition for women, infants, and children through our WIC program.
According to the health department, WIC provides supplemental foods for children's periods of critical growth and development, nutrition education, information and support for breastfeeding, and referrals for other health services.
Arkansas lawmakers yesterday rejected a $4.5 million contract to promote the new health insurance marketplace. It comes as enrollment begins today. The contract called for spending federal money on TV, radio, and newspaper ads, as well as direct mail and billboards. Governor Beebe reacted, saying it seems lawmakers are contradicting themselves.
If you're voting for the private option, I mean, how do they expect to get the word out? Now, maybe they've got a better way, and I'm certainly open to listen. If they've got a better way to get that message out to people, and maybe they want less money spent on this kind of message getting out or more on a different kind, I'm certainly open to listen to what they've got to say.
Meanwhile, Heather Haywood with Arkansas Health Connector says there will be an event today at the Clinton School of Public Service to help people learn more and sign up with one of the four companies taking part.
Those attending the event can meet with trained and licensed guides to assist with enrollment. We will have information about the new health insurance marketplace. We will have the Department of Human Services on hand, and we will also have SHIP, which is our Senior Health Information Program. We will have those people on hand to assist consumers with information and also help them enroll.
Officials expect about 500,000 Arkansans to use the online marketplace to sign up. The insurance marketplace was created as part of the federal health care law, which will not be affected by the federal government shutdown.
And with state lawmakers refusing to spend advertising dollars to promote the health insurance marketplace, state health officials are moving forward with other efforts to make sure residents meet enrollment deadlines. During an event yesterday at the Clinton School in Little Rock, Arkansas Surgeon General Joe Thompson said the state's healthcare system has been on the verge of collapse because 1/4 of Arkansans between the ages of 19 and 64 have not had health insurance coverage. But with open enrollment beginning for the insurance marketplace, today is the first day for that 25% to get coverage.
The most important day really is probably around December 15th because coverage starts on January 1st. So December 15th is the important day so that we maximize, optimize people's coverage. March 31st is the last day that they can sign up for this year. So we now are firing a shot to try to get as many of 550,000 Arkansans who today don't have health insurance coverage.
Andy Allison, Arkansas Medicaid Director with the Department of Human Services, says more work must be done to help residents understand the costs and benefits of enrolling early.
For those above 138% of poverty, enrollment's not immediate. Costs are incurred immediately upon the onset of some acute or high-cost event. So again, we have a tremendous communication challenge so that citizens understand the cost involved in the healthcare system, how to avoid them, how to be personally responsible, how to take advantage.
Cindy Crone is the insurance deputy commissioner for the online marketplace. She says the coverage provided by the new plans will ultimately benefit all Arkansans.
We've talked about what's in it for low-income people or people under 400% of the federal poverty level, which is most of Arkansans. 75% or more would hit that threshold. But all of us above that will be helped also, because on average we're paying about $1,500 a year more in insurance premiums to help pay for those who have no coverage, to pay for the uncompensated care. So as people get healthier and everybody gets in, then the costs for everyone, including the full pay, will go down as well.
In all, the four companies participating are offering 71 plans on the exchange. For more information on health insurance plans, go to arhealthconnector.org or healthcare.gov.
Mostly cloudy tonight, lows between 64 and 69 throughout the region. Tomorrow, there is a 30% chance of showers in northwest Arkansas with a high in the lower 80s. 40% chance of showers tomorrow for the Arkansas River Valley with highs in the mid-80s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, lows from 64 to 68. This is anything but an ordinary Tuesday. Hundreds of thousands of federal employees are not reporting to work today across the country after the House and Senate in Washington, D.C. could not reach an agreement to keep the federal government operating at full capacity. Also today, the new health exchange enrollment, part of the unrolling of the Affordable Care Act, begins in Arkansas. This weekend, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas discussed those matters with John Brummett, a political columnist, read in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Roby asked him what to expect as the healthcare exchange becomes reality in Arkansas.
It's going to depend. It's going to be an administrative nightmare. Things are going to go wrong. People are going to not know what to do. The politicians are going to exploit the uncertainty. We had a big fal-de-rol about the Medicaid prescription drug benefit. People just outraged at how complicated it was to make the decisions. It's going to be exponentially worse than that. But for the moment, as we speak right now, I think the rates that were announced this week have sort of lessened the vitriol. Mm-hmm. In fact, I had a Republican legislator tell me that he said some of his colleagues saying, "What's this? These aren't unreasonable. They seem okay." And for the time being, particularly with the subsidies, if people understand that.
Right.
we had a front page story in the Democrat Gazette, Arkansas's rates are higher than the national average. Well, it's a matter of dollars, not mm-hmm. a matter of tens of dollars or hundreds of dollars. But then if you consider that we have an inordinately poor population that's going to get most of that rate subsidized, more than richer states, we'll be paying less. But everything requires two or three paragraphs just to get started. And our dialogue is usually about mere phrases within sentences.
140 characters or less in many instances.
For the moment, to conclude that, I think that that Obamacare had a good week in Arkansas. But I think Jay Bradford is right to warn this. When this thing opens October 1 and we go through to March and we're trying to sign people up, there's going to be... It's going to be chaos. There will be chaotic moments. There will have to be. There always are on something this is something this massive.
Yeah. When you're talking earlier about the fact that these subsidies are going to kick in and people are going to really start seeing, I've used the analogy that it's kind of like we're on a car dealer's parking lot and you see all of the insurance plans or the different cars and you got red ones and blue ones and black ones and you got trucks and SUVs and compact cars and then you got the sticker prices or what we got this past week. We hadn't seen the dealer's discount rate yet, which is what happens when you plug in the exchange income numbers.
Yeah, and even the sticker prices for someone as well as formed as I'm supposed to be. I was telling a Republican legislator the other night, well, the one guy who's going to get hurt by this is me. You know, a 60-year-old self-employed guy who buys his own insurance is going to be, and I quote a figure, he said, no, it's not. Turn a few more pages. You know, there's another bronze rate over here that's less. And I fancy myself as... keeping up.
Right.
So take that and multiply it a couple of hundred thousand times, and it's going to be wild.
You're rounding up to 60, aren't you? You're not quite there yet.
No, I'm rounding up for when. yes, thank you. I'm mere 59 years old, and thank you.
You wrote this past week in one of your political columns, the remarkable political story is that you haven't heard much crowing about these rates from right-wing obstructionists and extremists. We did hear a little bit towards the end of the week, the Americans for Prosperity pulled out some examples, did some things like that, but
not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about from the more outspoken right-wing legislators who opposed the private option in the beginning, and who were saying that when these rates come in, and this turns out to be nonsense, that these rates are going to be as cheap as, or possibly cheaper than traditional Medicaid, then the political climate is going to change. Those rates came out. They were less than the estimates. There's a very good opportunity. They are at most competitive with straight Medicaid, if not cheaper. They were largely silent. Yeah, the Koch brothers group, Americans for Prosperity, they're going to come out with something. Of course they are. I'm talking about the ones who will cast the votes and who might make, and particularly those who voted, Republicans who voted for it last time, who were looking that maybe they wouldn't vote to re-up it because these prices are going to scare everybody. That's off the table, I think. For the moment. That's what I meant by that.
At least for the moment.
For the moment. Everything's for the moment.
Let's talk about staying in the health insurance silo, but let's move to teachers and their health insurance problems, or public school employees, actually. Raging debate this past week. There seems to be a lot of meetings going on to try to find a solution to this $53, $58 million deficit in the insurance plan, depending on who you talk to. Do you think that lawmakers are prepared to let those premium increases for those public school employees kick in at a higher rate and pay that political price, or do you think at the end of the day they come up with a solution that will remedy this problem?
I don't see any way in the world these legislators or any legislators would be willing to sit idly by and say we can't do anything while rate increases of that magnitude affect already underpaid but still politically popular teachers. I think they got to solve it, and I think Governor Beebe knows they have to solve it, and he's trying to make it as untenable as possible. He's trying to say let's do it responsibly, because you know my best friend Jason Rapert, he was the first one to jump out on this issue, and basically he said let's just go tap the surplus and plug in the money. And well, okay, then what about the ongoing problem? What about the fact that you merely stop the bleeding for the moment and you don't reform the system? So it's a difficult issue. I can't tell you what the solution's going to be. Mm-hmm. I think what usually happens in this case is that Beebe is especially good at this, and his people, they're going around the sofa cushions of the education department and state government, and they're finding money here and there. Well, look here. Look here.
Five
what
million,
we got.
Eight
look, we
million,
got something over here.
Million.
We squirrel this away.
Right.
We use that. And we'll put some of that together, augment it with some of the surplus money, and then we're going to have to change the plans. The state has to put in more recurring money. School districts have to ante up more consistently, and the gold plan is not going to be as gold as it has been. I think all of that has to happen, and I think it has to happen politically.
Let's talk about moving to federal issues, something that brought the prior cotton race into center stage, and that is the federal government shutdown, showdown going on up in Washington, D.C. We actually saw some side of John Bozeman, supposedly, at least reportedly.
We didn't get to see it.
I know, but he accosted Ted Cruz in private over his filibuster stand. Who gets the political advantage in this showdown that's going on right now? Is it Pryor or is it Cotton?
Well, they're working hard. Each camp is working hard to make sure it's the other side that gets the political disadvantage. And I just, you ask me, I'll tell you, if this government shuts down, the blame will accrue to the Republicans. It simply will. All the polls show that. It will be true that the president could have made some concession and avoided the shutdown if it happens, but that concession would have required him to abandon his centerpiece policy without a vote to repeal it. It is untenable, it is unreasonable to think that he and the Democrats would compromise that. The Republicans have only the House, they don't have the Senate, they don't have the White House. They're not in a position to do anything other than obstruct, and I think the people get that. I think if we shut down, and then if worse than that, we default on debt, it is a political implosion for the Republicans. I really believe that it is.
But you think the general public has basically been able to determine that it's an obstructionist attitude, that it's not
Yeah. I mean, there are those, the more ideological people, who simply believe that as a matter of virtue, you must oppose Obamacare in any way that you can, but that's maybe 10% of the electorate. That's the Tea Party extreme. Basically, people want government to work, and I believe the coalescing spot where the people want their government to be right now is, okay, I can see where this Obamacare might do a little good if we fixed it. Why don't you Republicans stop trying to kill it and make it better? I think I could be wrong.
You've never been wrong before.
Well, this would be, it'd be one of the few times. But I think that's a politically popular position, because I think there is, while there's a plurality opposed to, quote, Obamacare, I think an approach of let's make it work. Let's find out what's most absurd about it, most unfair about it, most costly about it, and most unjust about it, most chaotic about it, and let's emphasize that, because people are pretty resigned. They're starting to get it. We're going to get it.
John Brummett is a political columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. He talked to Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas this weekend before it was certain the federal government would halt. You can hear more at talkbusiness.net. Support for talkbusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon communication store near you or online at vzw.com/small business. And CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at cegpartners.com.
The shutdown of the federal government at midnight Eastern time last night has had some immediate effects, but if it continues, there could be more consequences locally. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis this morning talked to Sean Harper, operations project manager at Beaver Lake, about what the shutdown might mean.
As the Army Corps of Engineers is a federal agency, the effects of the government shutdown at Beaver Lake are immediate. Harper says that the most visible signs of the shutdown will be noticed at Corps-controlled day-use parks and campgrounds around the lake.
We're in the process even this morning of going around to our day-use areas and our campgrounds and starting the process of putting up barriers and closing some gates. We essentially have to, this morning, block off access to these public use areas around Beaver Lake that the Corps operates, so that they're closed, because that's what the law requires. Obviously, we do have some campers that were already in the parks. In fact, I believe about 90 campsites around the lake were occupied. And so we've got to go and communicate with those folks and advise them of the government shutdown and that they'll have to be making other arrangements for their camping, which essentially means that they'll need to, you know, leave the park by tomorrow evening. 8 o'clock tomorrow night is when we need to have all the campers out of the park, and so we'll have those campgrounds shut down.
However, the privately owned marinas and their access roads will remain open, but Harper says that boat access to the lake will be somewhat limited.
Probably the bigger impact for our local folks would be obviously getting on the lake itself, launch ramps at core operated parks. The public won't have access to those, but there are some launch ramps around the lake, such as Highway 12 Bridge, different places where folks can still launch their boats and get on the water. So that's just the best we can do right now.
Aside from lake access, Harper says that all but one of the campgrounds right on the lake are controlled by the Corps of Engineers. Other lake amenities will be affected as well, but Harper says that there are some alternatives to Corps-controlled areas. Take camping, for example. Harper says that Clifty Park in Carroll County won't be affected by the shutdown, as is run by the county and not by the Corps of Engineers.
It's essentially a leased area that they operate, so the remainder of the campgrounds, if you will, on the lake are cooperated. That's 12 different areas. Of course, you know, you have Hobbs State Park, which is a state park, and so they're not affected by this shutdown. They offer similar services such as trails and the opportunity to get out in nature around the lake. And Hobbs is open. You just won't be able to use the core operated trails that are located in the park areas and obviously by the dam. So, and most of the other private campgrounds are not located right on the lake, just nearby. And obviously those are still open since they're privately operated.
But not all operations at Beaver Lake will cease because of the government shutdown.
The power generation is still going to continue. There's going to be sufficient staff maintained to operate the dam internally in terms of any kind of gate changes that might need to be made. Power generation, those requirements are still in effect, and so there's a minimum staff that's going to be maintained to make sure those things still occur.
Harper says that a minimum staff will remain at the Beaver Lake Project office to ensure that gates remain closed and to maintain security at the parks. But Harper says that if the shutdown lingers, the majority of the 14 full-time staff at the Beaver office will be furloughed.
Should the shutdown continue, those folks would be furloughed on Thursday. Right now, during this period where we're trying to shut down the parks, we're actually utilizing some multi-year funds to keep people on board for a couple of days while we go through the process of shutting down parks and all the things that have to be done to kind of stop providing services to the public. But those funds would be pretty much exhausted by Thursday, and at that point, 12 of the Beaver Lake Project Office staff would be furloughed, and two would remain in order to provide monitoring and security of the areas.
But he says that as of now, things could change and that the shutdown is still a fluid situation, which makes it difficult to estimate how long it would take to reopen closed facilities.
Just from sitting right here right now, I would say it would probably take a couple of days to get everything back up and running like it was before the shutdown occurred. And it kind of depends on when of course, if a continuing resolution or some other instrument is passed very quickly, then it might be really quite simple in a matter maybe of less than a day to get it open. But if it's an extended period of time and many things have been shut down, and it could take a day or two to get that done.
Harper says that dealing with a government shutdown isn't something that Corps of Engineers employees routinely encounter, so much is still unknown about how the situation will unfold. He says that officials in the Beaver Lake Project office will issue information to the public through its Facebook page periodically as the situation does develop, but replies may take some time as the office will be short of personnel. The address for that page is facebook.com/BeaverLakeUSACE. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis. Thank you.
It is Tuesday, the first day of October 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Issa Negreta.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Happy October.
You know what that means, right?
That we have 3 months left in the calendar year.
No. It means that Halloween starts in 3, 2, 1, now.
I have actually been in some chain retail stores that would beg to differ that say
yes.
The day after Labor Day it started.
But uh-huh.
Some would say that you just started Christmas, but go ahead.
I'm going to stick with Halloween for a while.
Okay.
Let's do that one.
All right. Here are some early highlights. The Nightmare's Haunted House, which mm-hmm. comes with a ghoul bus, will be open from 7 to 11 starting October 5th on weekends. It is at 13080 Highway 71 North in Bentonville. A new event this year will be a paintball zombie shoot.
Okay.
Zombies are the new vampires.
Yeah, they are.
Telling you.
They are.
Cost is $13, and it's sponsored by the Bentonville Breakfast Lions Club. You can find out more at hauntednightmares.org. Voices from Eureka's Silent City.
It's all about music this year.
Yes. The Historical Museum is hosting its 5th annual cemetery walking tours. Those start on October 18th. Of course, it is at the Eureka Springs Cemetery. And as Kyle said, the theme this year is stories about musicians who lived in Eureka Springs during the 30s and 40s.
Side note, do you know who was the first music ensemble to play the City Auditorium?
No.
John Philip Sousa.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Like a Sousa March?
As in the Sousa March,
wow.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah.
I know
okay,
I've got tickets to hear B.B. King.
Okay. Right.
Okay. This all starts at 5:30 and tours leave every 20 minutes. The last tour is at 8:30. Tickets are $10 for adults and $5 for children 12 and younger at the Chamber of Commerce, any Cornerstone Bank location, or at the museum downtown. They run shuttles because there's no parking at the cemetery, and you can find out more at 253-9417. And the Rogers Historical Museum will offer two historic Rogers ghost walks on October 24th and October 26th. There's two each night, one at 7 and one at 8. You meet at the museum. Each tour is limited to 15 participants, and tickets come with a suggested donation of $5 for adults 19 and older. You can find out more at the museum at 621-1154. And in the October 11th edition of What's Up, which is in, hold your breath, the Benton County Daily Record, the Rogers Morning News, the Springdale Morning News, the Northwest Arkansas Times in Fayetteville, and the regional edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, you can find a whole bunch of Halloween stuff, and we'll continue that up through Halloween.
Thank you.
Becca Martin-Brown is features editor, Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The Jones Center for Families in Springdale looks a little different this week, a bit brighter on the outside. Mazur, an artist and muralist from Ireland, has spent more than a week transforming a large outdoor wall into a vibrant message of perseverance. He spent the week enlarging the image from an original piece of paper to a wall that is more than 100 feet long and about 30 feet high. Gallons of paint, tall ladders, a boom lift, and several young helpers were used in the creative process. And in between the work, Mazur popped over to a taqueria for lunch.
Unbelievable. So I had it yesterday, and I've had it today, and I'll probably try and squeeze another few in before I go.
That was Mazur last week, a few feet from his new favorite place for tacos in downtown Springdale. He was taking a break from working on the mural that helped generate attention for the first Spring Creek Arts Festival for Young Artists that will be held next month in the Jones Center. The mural is visible to motorists and pedestrians traveling by the Jones Center on either Emma Avenue or Huntsville Road.
Been working there since last Monday. On a big mural there with the kids in Jones Center, sort of getting to know them, them getting to know me, showing what I do and getting to participate and help in any way they could. So it's been a great experience the last few days, yeah.
The vivid mural has both literal and metaphorical messages. The word support can be read in large purple letters emblazoned across a yellow background and images of different colors. Mazur says some of those figures, like a green hand and arm pushing against the ground, are designed to suggest getting back up after falling down. Mazur, who has also created a large impressionist image of General William O. Darby in downtown Fort Smith, says he places positive messages in all of his work. Many young people helped Mazur in this most recent mural project, and he says their fingerprints are all over the mural in Springdale.
So they were pretty much just doing the tough work. I was sketching up and be like, that's going blue, and then, the blue beside the yellow, I was teaching them about contrasting colours and how they work and complement each other, and just asking me 100 questions as well of
who I am and why I'm here, and try to tell them where Ireland is. And so it's cool, you know. It's great to just tell them my little world that they're not aware of, and then me coming into their world. I've never been here before, and leaving my mark with them, and hopefully they get something positive from it and can talk about that maybe, or you know, not being cheesy, but to have a little bit of positive impact on their life is quite rewarding for me.
Mazur says the mural on the wall at the Jones Center began as a sketch on a piece of paper. After everybody involved signed off on the design, the only thing he had to do was recreate that small image on a much, much larger canvas. He's been creating murals around the world for more than 15 years, so he says the recreation of one of his ideas onto a giant canvas isn't alien to him. But still, when he saw the actual edifice for this project, there was a momentary pause.
When I got there, it was like, whoa, here we go. And it's big, and I'm cool with that, but it's the heat as well. The heat gets me, you know. We don't have this weather home, so it's, you know, it's just a little bit tiring. Because it's labor-intensive work. You're painting a huge wall. But I've no complaints. I can't complain. It's been great.
Mazur's work has also been reproduced on a limited number of shirts and posters to help raise money for the Spring Creek Arts Festival. With his bright, large work now on public display in downtown Fort Smith and at the Jones Center in Springdale, the Irish artist is leaving his mark in the region.
I hope so. Look, I'm back here because it's a very inviting town, city. Like, it's everyone's so welcoming, and sort of like it's become a little bit of like a home away from home, and it's great. You know, I'm not built for real big cities. Like, I love New York. I was there doing a piece just last week, but it's overwhelming here. It's like a good pace, southern hospitality. Is that what you call it? You know, everyone's so welcoming. Like, why wouldn't you love that? You know, and I'm even thinking about maybe staying here for a year next year. So I'll look into that as well. So
because of the tacos.
The tacos, yeah. And all those homebrew beers, they're great too, you know.
The Jones Center mural was formally dedicated yesterday in Springdale, and Mazur is on to his next projects. He'll help the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art in Madison, Wisconsin, dedicate a new space, then go to Chicago before heading home to Ireland. His latest mural at the Jones Center for Families in Springdale is now on display and will last for...
ever. I don't know. Hopefully, I don't see it being removed or anytime soon. And hopefully, I'm going to be in the States a lot of next year. So I'll keep in contact with the guys, hopefully work with them again, follow up. Because, you know, they're on a journey where they're trying to take kids from one situation, put them in a better, and they can see that full journey. I usually just dip in and dip out. So I want to keep a relationship with them and see how the guys are getting on. And with that, then I can keep an eye on the mural and, you know, maybe a pigment in might fade because of this heat. So, you know, I'll address that, or they might get vandalized. I don't know, but I'm there to make sure it's okay, you know.
Mazur, whom the Irish Times has identified as one of the 100 creative catalysts in Ireland, can be found online at mazurart.com or at his Facebook page, Mazur Art. And he spells his name M-A-S-E-R. He talked to me last week during a break from creating a new mural at the Jones Center for Families. And if you'd like more information about the Spring Creek Arts Festival for students, you can go to their website, springcreekfestival.com.
This week in This American Life, a police officer, Adrian Schoolcraft, decides that he's going to wear a secret tape recorder on the job. He records roll calls where cops are told that their boss wanted more tickets issued or they'd be disciplined.
He wants at least 3 seatbelts, 1 cell phone.
Adrian Schoolcraft also records police being told not to file reports on the worst crimes to help their numbers. But then the police go after Adrian Schoolcraft. This week.
Listen Sunday at 10 a.m. to KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Lots of outdoor events happening in the region.
For many people, this is their favorite time of year to be outside.
We have a gorgeous area that we live in, but sometimes in the summer it's a little hot for people to get outside, and the winter a little too cold. So
before we talk about those outdoor events, I'm anticipating a beautiful fall. I don't know why, because every time we've ever done a story about what makes the leaves turn colors, it seems like I get contradictory information, like it can't be too wet, it can't be too dry. Uh-huh. But I'm just hoping that we're going to have a spectacular autumn.
Okay, well, fingers crossed.
There you go.
Fingers crossed. Rich Products Corporation will sponsor the 3rd annual Redbone Fly Fishing Invitational to catch the cure for cystic fibrosis. The event will be held Thursday through Saturday, with events kicking off at Spring Valley Anglers Club in Maysville, Arkansas, beginning with registration Thursday from 2 to 5 in the afternoon. The event will launch with two fishing groups beginning the morning of Friday the 4th at 8 a.m. and continue through the day. The weekend will end with a dinner, auction, and awards ceremony to be held at Arvis Ballpark in Springdale. Registration is required for the fishing event, and tickets must be purchased for the awards ceremony prior to the event. The Redbone Invitational in Northwest Arkansas has generated more than $60,000 annually for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation in Arkansas.
Saturday, the Hobbs State Park Conservation Area, along with the Ozark Off-Road Cyclists and Friends of Slaughter Pen Trails, will host young riders ages between 6 and 16 for a youth mountain biking event. The ride is part of a nationwide celebration that's known as Take a Kid Mountain Biking Day. The event will feature a family-friendly 4-mile bike ride along the Bashaw Ridge Loop of the 24-mile multi-use trail system at Hobbs State Park. The single-track ride will include some big climbs, fast downhills, as well as a great view of Beaver Lake. The ride is slightly technical, so no training wheels, please. All riders do have to wear a helmet. There will be a short introduction on how to ride, and several support riders will be on hand. And the ride will be followed by a free hot dog cookout that's sponsored by the Ozark Off-Road Cyclists. The ride begins Saturday morning at 10. It will end around noon. If you'd like more information and free advance registration, you can send an email to Rebecca at rebecca.spurlock@arkansas.gov.
The Illinois River Watershed Partnership is hosting a Fall Rain Garden Academy for those interested in learning how to design and build the low-impact development landscape features. The Rain Garden Academy will be tomorrow as a pre-conference workshop for the Illinois River Watershed Partnership's Restoration of Our Rivers Conference on Thursday and Friday at Crystal Bridges in Bentonville. The Rain Garden Academy will feature a how-to lecture series, a native plant tour at Crystal Bridges and Compton Gardens, and a luncheon. Attendees will receive resource materials, including a low-impact development manual, and learn how to apply for a rain garden mini grant.
Now, if you'd rather be indoors, the 6th Annual Ozark Folkways Fiber Art Show and Fair takes place Saturday, October 12th from 10 until 4 at Ozark Folkways in Winslow. It will feature a display of fiber arts, demonstrations, homemade food, live music all day featuring the band East of Zion. They have been
in here.
In our studio. The juried fiber arts exhibit showcases the various forms that fiber arts can take, including weaving, spinning, quilting, embroidery, knitting, crochet, felting, and wearable arts. A selection of the works from the exhibit will be available for purchase at the fair. That, again, is Saturday, October 12th from 10 until 4.
An author lecture has been scheduled for 3 to 4:15 October 13th. Historian William Pencak brings to life Crystal Bridges' oldest collection of paintings, the Levy Franks family portraits.
When you first walk in the permanent exhibit, that first room, that's where they are.
Oh, okay. He's going to do this in an exploration of America's rich Jewish history based on his book Jews and Gentiles in Early America, 1654 to 1800. He'll discuss the life lived by the Levy Franks family, as well as dramatic and visual depictions of early American life to tell the story of the five communities where most of colonial America's small Jewish population lived: New York, Newport, Charleston, Savannah, and Philadelphia. Admission is free, and seats can be reserved at crystalbridges.org. Now, is this the room where, when we went, you sort of pointed out different things in the picture that meant something, like somebody had a squirrel?
Yes, that's this room.
Okay.
And so there are images that are telling us all sorts of things that, had we been alive at the time, we would have known, but these images might not be part of the popular discourse now.
And it was, and you had told me it's something about the animals represented their status?
Right.
In culture or in society at that time?
Exactly.
Cool.
So that'll be Sunday,
very
October 13th. Yes. And finally, the Eureka Springs School of the Arts will have its 11th annual Mad Hatter's Ball Friday, October.
Already. It's already time for Halloween. I'm just realizing this. I'm sorry.
That's okay. The Eureka Springs School of the Arts will have its 11th annual Mad Hatter's Ball Friday, October 25th. It takes place at the Crescent. That's the Crescent Hotel, of course. There'll be auction items, artwork, and open bar. The ballroom opens at 7 that night, dancing to the music of Red Ambition. There'll be a pasta buffet provided by the Crystal Dining Room at the Crescent, and also a hat contest. That's all the information I have. A hat contest.
Have you ever been?
I have not.
I kind of want to go.
I do, too. That's during the KUAF Fall Fundraiser, by the way.
Oh, it is.
Yes. Tickets are $50. That includes the buffet. You can get your tickets at ESSA-art.org, or you could call 253 253- 5384. It raises operating funds for the Eureka Springs School of the Arts through ticket sales and the auction. It's a nonprofit school providing adults and youth classes in arts and crafts throughout the year for emerging and professional artists. And they say to get in, it's not just $50. You got to have a hat for the Mad Hatter's Ball.
All right.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The 12th annual Brits in the Ozarks All British Car and Cycle Show, benefiting the ALS Association of Northwest Arkansas Fighting Lou Gehrig's Disease, will be held Saturday. This event is from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the University of Arkansas Agri Park in Fayetteville. Registration and more information available at BritishIronNWA.org.
There are days when I wake up and I don't know what I'm doing here. I barely recognize the pair of eyes staring back at me in the mirror.
I am an absolute sucker for the singer-songwriter. There's just something about bright-eyed musicians earnestly singing lyrics that they've poured themselves into about life and love that just sucks me right in and makes me hang on their every word. If you, too, are interested in this genre, allow me to introduce you or perhaps reintroduce you to Ben Rector. Beautiful is the first single off his newest album, The Walking In Between. The record, which was produced in part by Jamie Kenny and Charlie Peacock, is also partially self-produced, and it's the first release on Rector's own label, aptly named Recordings. The 13-track album follows his previous two independent releases, 2010's Into the Morning and 2011's Something Like This, which collectively have sold more than 70,000 copies. Both albums did well on iTunes charts, with Something Like This reaching number one on the digital retailer Singer-Songwriter albums list. The Oklahoma native has toured consistently since his junior year at the University of Arkansas, and he now lives in Nashville. You can tell some of the town's sound has crept into a couple of the songs on the album, including the single Beautiful. The track is a reflection on a young love from years ago. Love songs are definitely something that Rector does well, and on this album, he explores the theme from various angles. In the tune I Like You, for example, he sings about his feelings as simply as he can. It's light and bubbly, reminiscent of that feeling you get at the beginning of a relationship when you first fall for someone. You'll also find the album's title buried within the song's lyrics.
There's no need to complicate it. Dress it up or overstate it. Without too much hesitation, here's the way I feel. Well, I like you, I like you, even when I don't try to. Yes, I do, that's the truth. I like you. 7 years is a long, long time.
Another excellent example of a well-done love song is Forever Like That. While the original version is a perfectly lovely tune, the acoustic version is the best. While I have nothing but respect for a musician's ability to blend a variety of instruments together in a coherent manner that makes it sound like these noises were always destined to be married, the simple combination of a rich, honest voice, smart lyrics, and an acoustic guitar speak right to my heart. Rector wrote this song about his feelings for his wife of 4 years. According to an interview on his publicist's website, Rector says some love songs are so big, you wonder if anyone can really mean that. But this one is realistic. It says life is not going to be perfect, but I'll be there for you.
I wanna love you forever I do. I want to spend all of my days with you. We'll carry your burden and be the wind at your back. I want to spend my forever, forever like that.
In recent years, the musician has found himself spending more time on airplanes, and while reading a magazine on a flight, he discovered an article that eloquently summed up the way he'd been feeling about making his new album. In the article, a distillery owner discussing his craft says, "In an age when everything is less than authentic, here today and gone tomorrow, we stay true to the craft. We are not a flash in the pan." According to his website, Ben Rector hopes people will feel a little bit of that sentiment in the songs on his new record. In addition to love songs, the album contains musings on ordinary life. An example is Making Money, a piano ballad recorded in one take. Rector says he hopes fans don't hate him too much for being a little honest and a lot sarcastic in the wonderfully simple track.
And it sure won't make you happy, so I think it's funny. We're so concerned with making money. And money won't keep folks from grieving, and it won't stop love from leaving. So here's my two cents, what's the use in making money?
Skipping ahead two tracks, you'll find Sailboat, an incredibly relatable song about finding your way in life. Rector says he hopes the track says something that you felt deep down but haven't been able to express clearly, and that you feel better knowing that everybody feels that way sometimes.
I feel just like a sailboat. I don't know where I'm headed, but you can't make the wind blow from a sailboat.
When looking for direction, some people look to heaven for guidance. In a couple of the tracks, such as If You Can Hear Me, Rector explores a relationship with God.
Sometimes the devil sounds a lot like worry, treading.
The Walking in Between showcases Ben Rector's skills as a pianist, guitarist, vocalist, and lyricist as he reflects on everyday happenings like love and navigating this thing we call life. On his website, Rector says he hopes fans enjoy the record, that in some small way it becomes a part of their life, and that he will see them at a show sometime soon. If you want to catch Ben Rector in concert, he'll perform live at the Rev Room in Little Rock Thursday night. A month later, he'll be back in the region, performing at Kane's Ballroom in Tulsa, November 3rd. More information is available at benrectormusic.com.
From a movie screen, but I tell you what I really want.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, for the subject of her sweeping new novel, Eat, Pray, Love, author Elizabeth Gilbert turns to 19th century botany.
People were making their name and their fame at it. They were undercutting each other. They were selling out their countries. It was a really exciting time.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now this afternoon, beginning at 1 on KUAF.
And one more thing we want to tell you before we end this show. The city of Fayetteville has been recognized for its efforts to encourage recycling. The city announced yesterday that it has received the 2013 Government Recycler of the Year Award given by the Arkansas Recycling Coalition. Brian Pugh, Waste Reduction Coordinator for the city of Fayetteville, says the nonprofit trade group issuing the award regularly works with municipalities and private businesses to help reduce waste and divert materials from the landfill. He says the city was given the award for a number of reasons.
Well, we have a 56% participation rate in our curbside recycling programs, which on a national level, that is very good, very high. I believe the national average is somewhere in the low 30s, 30% range. So we have over half of our single-family homes participating in our curbside program. That was one of the main reasons. And other reasons are on our commercial programs, we have instituted recycling at apartment complexes and a commercial glass recycling program on Dixon Street in our entertainment district.
In addition, he says the opening of the Marion Orton Recycling Facility on North Street, the second municipally run recycling facility in the city, helped garner the award for the city. Although the award already reflects favorably on the city's waste reduction efforts, Pugh says plans are in place to try to increase recycling participation in the city, particularly curbside recycling.
We have a goal of 70% participation by 2015. So we'd like to get up to 70% of our households participating by 2015, and that's why we are undertaking a marketing program and trying to do more education with our residents so we can get those that are participating hopefully turned around and start putting out those recycling bins each week.
Pugh says the city has never done any kind of marketing for its recycling programs, and he hopes the use of advertising can encourage more residents to set out recyclables, participate in apartment recycling programs, or drop off the recyclables at any of the recycling drop-off locations in the city.
Support for KUAF comes from the Fayetteville Underground, promoting the visual arts in Northwest Arkansas, supporting artists working to the highest standards, and contributing to the advancement of Fayetteville as a destination city for the arts. Information regarding art shows, concerts, and more available at FayettevilleUnderground.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Beaver.
And let's see, tomorrow you and I are back for another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large.
We are.
And rehearsals continue for Gridiron, the extravaganza where area journalists poke fun of newsmakers.
Yes, we got to move into Rogers Little Theater last night, so that's always an exciting time for at least me. I always feel much more comfortable once I'm on a physical stage.
How many Gridirons have you been in now?
I think this is my 7th.
Wow.
Yeah.
And another KUAF representative will be on stage this year.
Yes, Zeke Martin. You hear him do the break sometimes. He's been doing Morning Edition when our own Pete Hartman is not around. And he helped backstage last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then decided to be, or I think he got tricked into being on stage this year. That's usually how it happens.
Yes.
But he's doing a fantastic job. There are a couple skits I'm very excited for him to be in. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. So you want more information, nwagridiron.com. It's Friday and Saturday. Tickets are $25. If you can't make Friday or Saturday, you can come on Thursday night. It's dress rehearsal. You do need a ticket to get in. It's free. So email me at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com, and I'll get you those tickets, and you can come check it out.
And bring non-perishable food items.
Yeah, it's going to be a food drive if you get Thursday. Bar will be open, so you can purchase libations there.
Scholarships to the University of Arkansas, as well as Rogers Little Theater, benefit from all the money raised.
Lots of people benefiting from this. So come out, have a good time, laugh at our expense. It's totally fine.
Okay. I look forward to it.
Yeah, I know you do.
I do. All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening. Another brand new edition will come your way tomorrow at noon.
Have a happy Tuesday.